नायं लोकोस्ति न परो न सुखं संशयात्मनः. Translation: But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. Text 41. Yoga sanyasta karmanam jnana sanchina sanshayam atmavantam na karmani nibadnanti dananjayam. Translation: One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of his actions, and whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated factually in the self. Thus, he is not bound by the reactions of work, O conqueror of riches. Text 42. Tasmad ajnana sambhutam hritstam jnana sinatmanah chitvainam sankshayam yogam atishto tishta bharata. Translation: Therefore, the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. Chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, Text 1. Arjuna Vacha Sanyasam Karmanam Krishna Punar Yogam Cha Sangshasi Yachtreya Etayor Ekam Tanme Bruhi Sunishchitam. Translation: Arjuna said, O Krishna, first of all you asked me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? Text 2. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Sanyasa Karma Yogascha Nishreyasya Karavubau Tayostu Karma Sanyasat Karma Yogo Vishishate. Translation: The personality of Godhead replied, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. Text 3. Gyayasa nitya sanyasi yo na dveshti na kangshati nidvandvo hi mahabaho sukam bandhat pramuchate. Translation: One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated, O mighty-armed Arjuna. Text 4. Sankhya Yoga Pratagbhala Pravadanti Napandita Ekam Apyastita Sangyag Ubayor Vindate Palam. Translation: Only the ignorant speak of devotional service, karma yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world, Sankhya. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself to one of those paths achieves the results of both. Text 5. Yat sankhyai prapyate stanam tad yogair apigamyate ekam sankhyam cha yogam cha yapashati sapashati. Translation: One who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees things as they are. Going back to text 37, page 266. As a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Perfect knowledge of self and super-self and of their relationship is compared herein to fire. This fire not only burns up all reactions to impious activities, but also all reactions to pious activities, turning them into ashes. There are many stages of reaction. Reaction in the making, reaction fructifying, reaction already achieved, and reaction a priori. But knowledge of the constitutional position of the living entity burns everything to ashes. When one is in complete knowledge, all reactions, both a priori and a posteriori, are consumed. In the Vedas, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22, it is stated, Ubhe Uhai Vaisha Ete Tarat Yamrita Sadvasad Huni. One who overcomes both the pious and impious, one overcomes both the pious and impious reactions of work. So, different reactions. For example, one may have committed some sinful activities in the past, and there will be reactions. But those reactions may not be mature yet. Therefore, they may be said to be reactions in the making. Just like, for example, a disease. Let's say someone has contacted some smallpox. So he has the germ. It's in his body. But you don't see the effects yet. He doesn't have any symptoms of a person who has smallpox, but it's incubating, it's growing. And in due course of time, it will come. He'll see the reactions. In the same way, that's how karmic reactions work. Some of them come immediately, some of them take some time. Some of them are not yet fructified. Some of them were already fructified. We're getting, for example, this body. When someone gets a material body, that is his past karma already fructified. That's how he got the body. But there may be other things coming, which he doesn't even know what's coming due to his past activities. And there may be karmic reactions for activities that he hasn't even performed yet, also. A priori means? Want to try it? Before. And a posteriori, after. After the fact. So, but the beauty of devotional service is that all the reactions are cleared. It's like pushing the clear button. If you have a calculator, you know, and you've made all this big combination of adding and subtracting and multiplying and, you know, putting it all together, and then you push clear. It's all wiped out. Or even on a computer, you can have a huge, sometimes we do this by accident, you have this huge file, you know, and you've done so many things to it. You've edited it and this and that and this. And somehow or other, it gets cleared, finished. It's gone. So that's what devotional service does to one's reactions. And Krishna promises this in the 18th chapter. Everyone should know this verse. Sarva dharman paricaja mamekam sharanam braja ahang tung sarva papebhyo moksha ishami mashucha. That just surrender unto me, abandon all varieties of religion, and I will protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. This verse also explains, however, that not just the reactions to sinful activities, but also reactions to pious activities. Because those reactions are also binding. For example, if someone, let's say he performs so many good activities, he's full of pious activities, so what will be the result? He gets to come back in his next life and enjoy all the good results in this material world. He gets to have a nice body. He gets to be very beautiful. He gets to get a nice education. He gets to be wealthy. He gets to be popular. So what do you think? Is it a good idea? Well, those things are also a curse. Because, let's say you have a very beautiful body. Let's say you're very attractive. So what will happen? Well, everyone will be attracted to you. And then what will happen? We know what happens then. When one body is attracted to another body, females attracted to males, well, we know. It's like Prabhupada said, boys are good and girls are good. But boys and girls together are bad. So, it's not such a great, wonderful thing to come back and have a nice, beautiful, or nice, handsome body, because then you'll be inclined to use it in the wrong way. That's the nature, especially in the association we have now. Everyone's using their bodies in the wrong way. Or even to be very intelligent is not such a great, wonderful thing. It's like we see the scientists. They have, you know, wonderful brains. They can accommodate so many different ideas and things. But what do they use their brains for? Nonsense. Speculative theories. Wasting their time on black holes, spinning black holes, and quarks, gluons, quasars. Australopithecus. So many nonsense things. They waste their time. Their brain. Maya apritigyana, their intelligence, stolen away by illusion. So you may come back with a very nice IQ, and you can be sure that with that nice IQ, you'll just speak all nonsense. You'll study so many books on nonsense, and then you'll write books on nonsense, because that's what you've been fed. So now you'll bestow that upon others. So, then what else? Money. Well, we know. Money corrupts. For most people, if they have money, it's for sure they'll be corrupted. Because then he doesn't have to work, and he doesn't have to be humble. If he has money, he can be as corrupt as he wants, and no one will say anything. He just pays him something. He can do anything. Anything sinful he wants. So generally, money is not a blessing for one in this material world. It's a blessing. Some people think it's a blessing. Actually, it also has the other side. In the material world, every blessing is a curse, and every curse is a curse. So, everything is a curse in the material world. Whether it's, it doesn't matter how the shape is, how it looks on the outside. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, in the beginning, the mode of passion, things appear to be like nectar. But then, in the end, they turn out to be like poison at the end. But everything in the material world turns out to be poison. Whether it turns out to be poison in the beginning, like the mode of ignorance, it's poison in the beginning, it's poison in the middle, it's poison in the end. Passion, it starts off like nectar, but then it turns poison. In goodness, something starts off, appears like poison, but then it turns out like nectar. Because goodness leads to transcendence. Therefore, we should be good. Everyone should be a good person. Because then, he's on the path. Goodness itself is not transcendental, but it's on the path to transcendence. Goodness will help bring one. It's like going to the airport. If you want to fly to Europe, if you just stay at home, it'll be very difficult to get there. But at least if you make the effort to go to the airport, you buy a ticket, you stand in line. You're not in Europe yet, but you're on the path to Europe. So a mode of goodness is like that. It's bringing you to the airport so you can get on the transcendent flight. Text 38. In this world there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. Well, this is actually the motto for Rupanuga Vedic College, because really it's all about transcendental knowledge. There's nothing more sublime. There's nothing more sublime than transcendental knowledge, because transcendental knowledge and devotional service are synonymous, as you can see here in the verse. One who's become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this transcendental knowledge within himself in due course of time. And similarly, one who becomes accomplished in transcendental knowledge becomes then, he's able to enjoy devotional service in due course of time. Both. How can you get transcendental knowledge and not engage in devotional service? It means you didn't understand anything. If you actually understand it, then you have to engage in devotional service. And if you engage in devotional service, then you'll get transcendental knowledge. You can see they're intimately connected. In the Bhagavatam it says, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayat Yasu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayurahoitukam. By devotional service to Krishna, automatically knowledge and detachment come. Text 39. A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge. And having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. So this chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge. We can see why. It's all about transcendental knowledge. So, dedicated to transcendental knowledge. So dedicated to transcendental knowledge means that he has to give up so-called knowledge. He can't have both. Just like a person who wants good health, he has to eat only healthy food. He can't eat healthy food and garbage also. Say, I eat some healthy food, a very nice, what do you call it? What's the type of vegetables? What is it? Organic. I eat only organic vegetables 3 days a week, and the other days I eat garbage from the gutter. Very healthy. No. If he wants to have healthy life, then he has to eat only good food. You can't eat bad food also. Similarly, if you're really dedicated to transcendental knowledge, then you have to reject that which is not transcendental knowledge. It's not transcendental and it's not knowledge. That means we have to hear only from authorities, not from puffed up upstarts who have no knowledge, who are fools. What is the use in hearing from fools? He's speculating. In my opinion, perhaps, it could be, we now know, as soon as they say that, we now know, which they say a lot, the scientists, they say, Scientists now know. That means you didn't know before, and we suspect that you don't know now either. Scientists now know. That means the scientists before that, they also said that. Right? The group just before you, they said, scientists now know. Now you're saying, scientists now know, but the scientists before didn't know. So, this is not the type of knowledge that we want to get, because it's not knowledge. Knowledge is something that's correct under all circumstances. Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita. It's not that it's good for the 3000 BC age and now it's outdated. Bhagavad Gita is now out of fashion. It doesn't wear out. It doesn't change. It doesn't need revisions. Bhagavad Gita speaks. Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. There's no need for any revisions. In fact, if anyone revises it, he immediately becomes an offender if he tries to upgrade, improve it. That's why Prabhupada called his Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because everyone else thought, let's bring Bhagavad Gita up to the modern. Let's make it more applicable to the people. Let's put in a few things. That's the difference, because your ordinary knowledge, in a few years, it won't be knowledge. It'll be considered ignorance. Just like even our Columbus, even our country is based on ignorance. It was founded. He thought he went to somewhere else. Thought he was in India. He called them Indians. He thought he'd reached India. So our country is based on a mistake. That's the beginning. The discoverer thought it was somewhere else. And after that, after the first mistake, many other mistakes also have been made. That's the nature of the material world, to make mistakes. To err is human. But God doesn't, he's not human, therefore he doesn't err. Therefore, if we hear knowledge from him, we don't have to keep relearning, going back for new refresher course, teaching us again. That's the beauty. I know that's one reason I took the Krishna consciousness, because I thought, if I learn this knowledge, then I won't have to keep going back and learning something new again. Relearning, new update. Like any other subject, right? You have to do that. You always have to keep going back, learn the latest, read the. And if you don't keep up, then you're brushed aside. They just move you right aside. If you say, no, I'm just sticking with what I learned in the 50s, and they say, okay, sir, we'll give you your papers now. Here's your gold watch. You can retire because we can't use you anymore. You always have to keep learning. But what they're learning is not necessarily better. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, what we learn, this knowledge, we take with us also to the spiritual world. That's the nice thing about this knowledge. It's applicable in all circumstances. This is eternal knowledge. It never fades. It never grows old. It's not that what Krishna spoke in Bhagavad Gita was something untrue just for the earthlings or just for the people of this universe. No, it's also applicable in the spiritual world. The fact that we're all spirit souls, we're all parts and parcels of the Lord, we all have free will. If we act independently from the Lord, we will have to take the reactions. In the material world, everyone gets bodies. These things are all eternal truths. Going on. Text 41. One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of his actions, whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated factually in the self. Thus he is not bound by the reactions of work, O conqueror of riches. So who does one who's engaged in devotional service renounce his fruits to? He renounces them to Krishna. Otherwise, it's not called devotional service. It's if he gives the fruit. Generally, people want to enjoy the fruits for themselves, or they may want to enjoy the fruits with their friends, or with their family, or with their countrymen. But still, he's thinking, I want the fruits for me and my group. Either myself alone, like a miser. He takes the money and he goes, he keeps it all alone, and he doesn't want anyone around because he doesn't want them to share in his wealth. He's afraid they'll exploit him, so he just keeps it for himself. And he doesn't even enjoy it himself. He's afraid then he'll exploit himself. He's so paranoid. And a more magnanimous person, very generous, he wants to enjoy, but with his group. He doesn't want to enjoy with everyone, just his own group, hand-picked. It's like the Americans. I just saw there was a... Somebody got a bookmark upstairs. So it says America, God bless America. And then on the... It was a calendar there, and then it had for November... What is it? The Thanksgiving, it had a big turkey there. So what about the American turkeys? They don't... God doesn't get to bless them. No, we cut their heads off. And then we eat them. That's our, you know. So he's thinking, yes, God bless the American humans, but don't worry about the American cows, the American chickens, turkeys, so many American unborn babies. We can murder them. So therefore, unless one is Krishna conscious, he will be selfish. He will be motivated for his own selfishness or extended selfishness. Whereas a Krishna conscious person, a person engaged in devotional service, he gives all the results to Krishna and he lets Krishna use them the way he wants. He doesn't... It's like someone who gives a donation. Sometimes they put conditions. This donation must be used this, this, this. Okay, that's nice. That's conditional. You could say, I'm comparing that to conditional service, where someone wants to serve Krishna, but he has certain conditions. I'll serve you as long as you give me, you know, this and this and this and this. I'll be a nice servant. If you give me something else, I'm not going to serve. So that's the beginning stage. But the most advanced stage that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks of is unconditional service, where he doesn't put any conditions. I'll serve you even if you make me brokenhearted by not being present before me, or if you honor me, or you make me dishonored. Whatever. That type of service is like the gopis. The gopis' service was on that level. Therefore, Krishna cannot stop thinking of the gopis because their service is so extraordinarily unmotivated. They're willing to do anything that Krishna wants. There's a story, a true story, that supposedly Krishna had a headache once. And he told Narad Muni, his servant, he said, the only way I can get cured from this headache is if I can get the dust from the feet of my devotees and I'll place it upon my head. Then my headache will go away. So Narad Muni went around to all the chief, so many devotees, and said, Krishna wants to take the dust. He has a headache. He needs the dust from your feet to put on his head. And they said, dust from my feet on Krishna's head? I'll go to hell if I do that. So they wouldn't give. Then Narad Muni went to the gopis and they said, here, take, how much do you want dust? They said, you're not afraid of going to hell? He said, we just want Krishna's headache to be taken care of. We don't care what happens to us. Well, that is the highest level. Text 42. Therefore, the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. So these doubts, if one doubts Bhagavad Gita, let's read the next text because that... Oh. Okay, let's discuss this text. These doubts that have arisen in our hearts are due to ignorance. Otherwise, why would one doubt what Krishna is saying? And we shouldn't think that these doubts are a sign of our intellectuality. People like to think that, yes, to be doubtful is a sign of my higher intellect. And you, people who have no doubts, you are brainwashed zombies. That's why you accept everything, because you're brainwashed. And me, more intellectual, I doubt everything in the Bhagavad Gita. And Srimad Bhagavatam, I doubt everything in Srimad Bhagavatam. I doubt most things in Bhagavad Gita, or some things. But this doubting, why are you doubting the revealed scriptures? What is there to doubt? Well, I've never seen any of these extraordinary things that are described there. I've never seen people on other planets and, you know, people with four hands, four heads. You know, these things are, they don't tally with my what? With your experience or with your learning. Well, your experience is very limited. We have to admit that. It's only restricted to one planet and even not all the whole planet. And your learning is also restricted to whatever books that are available in your libraries on this one planet. But what about the books on other planets? You said, what? Books? Other planets? Other planets? Life? You don't even know there's life on other planets. You're thinking, maybe there's life on Mars, some algae or something. This is your knowledge. And yet the Vedas are giving us knowledge that is superior to anything we have here. But most people won't accept it. They doubt it. So, what can you do if someone wants to remain in ignorance? Just like the owl. When the sun comes out, he goes and hides in the cave or something. He's not interested in seeing the sun. What can you do? Well, some people, they just close their eyes and hide away. But at least, if we give them the sun, in other words, if we bring the sun is Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is the sun, then let them see. And those who are intelligent, they will appreciate. We cannot force anyone. But anyone who doubts the scriptures, the Vedic literatures, must be in ignorance. There's no other explanation. Then, Chapter 5, Text 1, Arjuna said, O Krishna, first of all, you ask me to renounce work, and then again, you recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? And Krishna answers the question perfectly by saying that they're both good for liberation, but of the two, devotional service is better. So it's not that Krishna is trying to confuse Arjuna. Generally, people think that mysticism means it has to be, you know, something you can't understand, like the sound of one hand clapping. It has to be something that, you know, you can't understand it and no one can understand it. I remember there was one Bhagavad Gita translation that was well read. People read it a lot. And the conclusion of the translator was, at the end, he said, I don't understand Bhagavad Gita, and I don't believe that anyone else can either. That was his conclusion. It's not possible to understand what Bhagavad Gita is talking about. And so people like that. This is good. It's not possible to understand. But no, Krishna is making it very clear. He says they're both good, but devotional service is better. So you make your choice. You can take renunciation. That leads to impersonal path. But of the two, devotional service is better. That leads to the personal path. Text 3. One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. Because, see, the renouncers, they hate the fruits. They don't want to take the fruits. They're afraid of the fruits. But Krishna says, such a person is free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage, and is completely liberated. In other words, he doesn't hate them nor desire them because they're not his. It's like if someone asks you, do you desire your neighbor's wife or do you hate her? It's not the only two choices. It's right? Is that the only two choices? To either desire her or to hate her? Why can't I just, you know, live without desiring her or hating her? She doesn't belong to me. She's my neighbor's wife. So why should I desire her or hate her? See, that's a devotee. He doesn't desire or hate the fruits. They don't belong to me. They're Krishna's. I give all the fruits to Krishna. You mean you don't desire them? No. You mean you don't hate them? No. Why should I hate them? What's wrong with the fruits? Nothing wrong with the fruits. If they're offered to Krishna, it's very nice. And the last... Four. Only the ignorant speak of devotional service, karma, yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world. Sankhya. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. We were speaking about that earlier. And the last one, one who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees things as they are. Any questions? So we'll read the purport. The aim, the aim of the analytical study of the material world is to find the soul of existence. The soul of the material world is Vishnu, or the super soul. Okay. Then in the next purport he says, the real purpose of philosophical research is to find the ultimate goal of life. Since the ultimate goal of life is self-realization, there is no difference between the conclusions reached by the two processes. So, in another place, Krishna says, Bahunam janmanamante gyanavam mam prapajate vasudeva sarvam iti samahatma sadurlabha. That the process of jnana, or sankhya, trying to understand everything and come to the conclusion that way, ultimately it will lead to the same point, vasudeva sarvam iti. It will lead to the point of Krishna, Vasudev. But it takes a long time. Bahunam janmanam. Many, many births and deaths. Whereas devotional service, you can do it in just a few weeks. So quick. Take up devotional service. What happens after a few weeks, bhaktas? You know, Krishna is the absolute truth, supreme personality of Godhead. Right? I surrender to him. There's no truth superior. You know everything in a few weeks. And the jnanis, it takes them thousands of lifetimes. So which is better? They both lead to the same. Prabhupada gave the example. If someone asks you, where's your nose? You say, here. But if you say, you start pointing over here. You know, that's the indirect way. He gives some, you know, convoluted way to find the nose. No, why? If you know, why not go directly? So if you want real knowledge, why not accept Krishna immediately? Krishna is the source of knowledge. He's the end of knowledge. He's the goal of knowledge. He is knowledge. Everything is culminating in Krishna. Any other questions? Well, a person who has doubts, if he's a neophyte, well, that's all right. It's expected that neophytes will have doubts. That's what it means to be a neophyte. A neophyte means he's not full of knowledge yet. But those doubts should be removed, as Krishna says here, by devotional service, by transcendental knowledge. So as he hears more, as he performs more devotional service, the doubt should go away, not that they should increase. The doubt should be removed. If the doubts aren't getting removed, that means he's still speculating. He hasn't stopped the process of speculation. He's attached to speculating. He thinks it's fun to always doubt everything and come up with a better idea. For example, if he hears, Krishna is the origin of everything. He says, okay, but who's the father of Krishna? Who's the source of Krishna? He won't accept the straight definition. Krishna is the source. Sarva karna karnam. The cause of all causes. He says, yeah, but who's the cause of Krishna? He's a rascal. He's not willing to accept that there's a higher authority than himself. You see? Because if Krishna says he's the supreme, and all the others, such as Brahma and Shiva and Narada, they all say that Krishna is the source of everything, and he says, but I don't believe anybody. I doubt everybody, including Krishna. Why? Because I am very intelligent. So this is still, he's proud of his own intelligence. He doesn't realize what a fool he is. So how will he make any advancement being such a fool and puffed up also? Other question? Doubts. Some doubts should go away very quickly. Some may last for a while, but they'll go away gradually. We shouldn't be disturbed by the doubts. Go on with your devotional service. You may have doubts. We all may have some doubts. But we should have confidence that this doubt is due to my ignorance. And it will be removed in due course of time. Just like if the doctor, he gives you some medicine. So, now if you see by taking the medicine that your disease is going away, that's good. You may still have some remnants. But you're confident because the disease is going away. Doubts should be removed. Otherwise, why will you continue if your doubts aren't getting removed every day? You'll stop devotional service. Okay, thank you very much. Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jaya.